in my personal history, the times that partners have been the most upset is when a relationship gets more serious.
Exactly.
And so I thought for sure, like, well, no one's going to get upset about casual sex, you know, because most people are like, oh, as long as it's casual, it's fine. But then it was totally flipped in this situation. And now, you know, now I've learned that, like, I always have that conversation with people that, like, no, I don't tend to have a lot of casual sex, but sometimes I do.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
That needs to be okay.
That needs to be okay.
Totally. Yeah. If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast.
Songs I know I did. False and made up for myself to fit.
On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about how to be open, honest, and unafraid when talking to other people about your relationships. Whether they are someone you're dating, a new acquaintance, or an old friend. A little something we like to call being unapologetic.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I gotta stop resisting that term.
No, it's finally. Here to stay.
Now it's a thing that we have to use.
Yeah.
So we even have stickers that say unapologetic on
TM,
it now.
TM.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah. What does it mean to be unapologetic?
Well, before that, can we set the scene a little
bit
of where we are and what's happening right now?
What is happening right now?
Well, right now we are about at the halfway point on our second national tour, which is super exciting. And right now we're in Dallas and in a nice little
cozy little bungalow.
Yep, in a little Airbnb. And there's a thunderstorm going outside. So if you hear any thunder in the background, don't be alarmed.
Thunder, feel the thunder. That song? Do you know it? No?
No?
I don't know. What are you referencing?
Damn it, I forget their name.
Well, that's not helpful.
But it's a song, and it's about thunder. Anyone who remembers...
Jesus.
Anyone who remembers, it's like a big top 40 right now, I think. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So just know that Multiamory never stops working, even on tour, in between shows.
Yeah.
Here we are recording yet another podcast, because this is our life.
Yeah, I feel like on this tour, in several cities, people have been like, so what stuff have you gotten up to in our city today?
And
we're
not a lot.
We sat in our Airbnb and planned another episode and recorded or planned our talk for...
This trip is not for fun. It's for business.
Yep.
Exactly. But here we are recording this fun episode, which is one we've been meaning to record for a while. So this is exciting to get to this.
So back to it. What does unapologetic mean?
All right. So essentially... being unapologetic is, you know, being unapologetic about the life that you live. And what that means more specifically is living a life that is as coherent or as congruent as possible. And what congruent means is a favorite word of mine. It essentially means just that your actions line up with your words, right? And also in different like in each communication you have with different people, that those things also line up. It's just kind of about everything being in congruence with each other, right?
It's kind of like your inner life matches your outer life as much as possible.
As much as possible, yeah.
And also it means not needing to feel like you have to lie or omit or even just conceal or dance around the truth of who you are and what you're doing in your relationships and in your life. And kind of, I think... taking ownership of it in a way.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, instead of just saying like, oh, well, you know, I do something and it's a little bit different than what you do or whatever. Instead, like really talking about it and owning it and being proud of who you are and what you're all about.
Right. And I feel like a part of this very big philosophical topic, I feel like a part of it is also knowing how to take care of yourself and to still feel okay, even in the face of rejection from people, even in the face of pushback from people. The more we describe it, the more I feel like this doesn't just apply to if you're, if you identify as polyamorous, this can apply to any kind of identity that you hold that maybe goes against the grain a little bit. But of course, on this episode, we're going to be focusing specifically on non-traditional relationships.
Right. Whatever that is, whether that's polyamorous or just... I mean, I feel like you're right, though. This really applies to anything. Yeah. Even if you're approaching all of your relationships as monogamous relationships, that there's still this, the way that you do relationships and the value you have in how you conduct those relationships, that's all part of the same thing.
Yeah, anything that's not the societal social norm could still be scary to put out there to the masses.
Well, because the big myth is that there is a societal norm. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about it a lot, and while, yes, there's certain structures like sexual exclusivity and, you know, that all relationships should be trying to lead toward marriage. Like, sure, those are societal norms. But in terms of how you actually do that, like what communication looks like in your relationships, what counts as exclusive or not, what's cheating or what's not, like that's something that often we assume, oh, everyone must have the same idea about this. But when you actually start to talk about it, you realize you don't.
Yeah.
And so being unapologetic, or in that case, unapologetically monogamous, right, is that is really owning those things and having those real conversations about what that means for you. And part of that, like Dedeker was saying, is knowing how to be true to those things, even if it might not always be received the best way.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Right. Someone might say, I disagree with that, and I don't want to associate with the likes of you. Is
be
you
gone.
Know, how to... Apparently we've all traveled to Middle England.
Middle England?
Yeah.
Like middle-aged England?
Yeah.
Like Middle Earth?
Ooh, or Middle Earth.
Middle Earth, yeah.
Either one.
Maybe they would do that there. So, okay, why are we talking about this? I mean, as so many people have said to me, like, well, why are you talking about something that's in the bedroom or that's whatever? Like, why are you making it my business?
Right. Well, again, if we're just going to focus on non-traditional relationships, we can talk about what the current status quo is right now. So non-monogamous relationships or non-traditional relationships are surprisingly pretty prevalent. Depending on what study you look at, some studies say that you know, at least 20% of the population has experienced some kind of consensual slash ethical non-monogamous relationship in their lifetime. There's other studies that say, like, right now, currently, probably about 5% of the population is in some kind of non-monogamous relationship. And those seem like maybe relatively small percentages, but it's a big chunk of people, you know?
Right. That's like, this many, is many millions people. Of people in the United States alone.
Yeah. And however, and again, just to put that in perspective, if 20% of the population has experienced a non-monogamous relationship and 5% is currently in one, right now, at least in America, only 6% of the population is vegan. And I guess depending on where you live, it may feel like
I am the 6%.
You're part of the 6%.
Yes, I am.
Depending on where you live, you may feel like, 6%, that feels rare. Or you may be like, it feels like there's freaking vegans everywhere.
Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So however, even though it's a relatively prevalent thing, of course, there's still a lot of blowback, a lot of stigma, a lot of consequences for people who are in non-traditional relationships, and that manifests in all kinds of different ways, whether it's like the stuff that we talked about with Eli Sheff about people having to handle custody battles for their children, about, you know, their polyamorous identity being used against them in a court case, a lack of workplace protections like we were talking about with Jonathan Lane, and of course, general negative perception. I think, you know, any of us who have either dabbled or fully identify as someone who thrives in non-monogamous relationship, everyone has a story of the negative reactions that they've gotten from someone, whether it's a friend or a family member or a potential partner or things like that. And I forget if we've mentioned this on the podcast before or not, but there was a study at the University of Michigan where they found that the negative perception of polyamorous relationships doesn't just affect how much a random person maybe thinks that they're less moral or less romantic or less stable, but it also bleeds into other more arbitrary categories, as in people perceive that a person who is non-monogamous is less likely to floss their teeth. Oh, we talked about the teeth flossing one. Or that they're less reliable in walking their dog, or less likely to get their taxes done on time.
Just simply because they're non-monogamous.
Yeah, because I think it's, you know, the attachment is like, oh, this person has anormative values, or this person isn't running their life correctly, or this person is maybe just an unethical person. And so that must mean that they're, quote
less
unquote,
responsible.
Like, less responsible, or quote unquote, a bad person in other areas of life as well.
And it's that they're less likely to do these things than a person who's monogamous.
Okay, exactly. Okay. That, you know, that people perceived that someone who's in a monogamous relationship was just like more morally upright and reliable and responsible.
Yeah. And the same thing holds true for people who are single versus married. That right, people find right. married people to be far more like trustworthy and kind even and understanding of others mm-hmm. than those who are single.
And again, this is just perception. This is not like, you know, pretty much every study of either polyamorous versus monogamous people or single people versus married people find that people have a pretty similar like life satisfaction and relationship Absolutely. Satisfaction level. It's just that the perception is very different.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like general fear and misunderstanding that comes along with non-traditional relationships. And most of it is just because of a lack of education and awareness and then a lack of a personal contact point for someone who's in a non-traditional relationship. I mean, before I became non-monogamous, I really had no idea that it was a thing. Right. I had definitely thought about it and I was like, I don't know. Do we all have to be monogamous people? But I didn't have a word for it. And I still think as much as it's like steeped into our lives, there's still a lot of people who have no idea what it is.
Definitely.
And then therefore, when they do come across it, there's a lot of fear involved with that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, anytime something's new and unknown, it is scarier. And that's unfortunate and causes a lot of problems in the world. Absolutely. But it is true. For example, you know, as more of the positive side of that is there was a Gallup poll that was done a little while ago that basically showed that if you personally know someone who's gay, that will affect your views about gay issues like gay marriage or other gay rights in a positive way. Just simply knowing somebody. They don't even have to be a friend, really, but right. just even mm-hmm. an acquaintance. Just knowing someone because it makes it human. It makes
exactly.
it like...
Exactly. It puts a face to this like amorphous concept.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there have been similar studies actually about trans issues as well, that even knowing someone who knows someone personally will make you more likely to... to vote more favorably on trans issues. Mm-hmm. So... this is essentially just that, like that higher visibility for same-sex relationships leads to lower disapproval and higher acceptance. And that for polyamorous people, I believe that this would be the same thing. There haven't been these same studies done, but it seems like a pretty obvious correlation there that, right. that this would be a similar type of thing.
Right.
That just simply being aware and like knowing about it rather than people kind of hiding behind pseudonyms or being sort of dodgy about it or accepting the idea that this is something you should only talk about in the bedroom, right? That's like, why are you talking about this thing? Because this is a bedroom issue. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be like, cool, like you're wearing your wedding ring right now. Gross. Like, I didn't want to know that you're having sex. Like,
yeah.
Right? Like,
why
how absurd is that?
Tell us these personal problems.
Yeah.
Display it to the world.
But I think that is also like people misconstrue that it is just a bedroom thing, that it's just a sex thing as opposed to it being a way of life and about relationships and about like emotional connections with other humans, right. not just one.
Yeah. So if we're looking at the big picture, ultimately, I think why it's important to talk about this and I think why it's important to be unapologetic is that higher visibility does lead to more acceptance and less disapproval for everyone. And so, of course, this could be on the macro level of being unapologetic, like to the entire world or like on a podcast, for instance,
right.
or it could be just on the micro level of being open and out and unapologetic with yourself and with the people closest to you. Because we're not here to necessarily tell you like you have to go start a podcast of your own and start talking to everybody about your life and your relationships.
Sure.
Like you're going to have to figure out the right level for you. That's the safest and the best for your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways of doing that is to look internally. I think that's sort of the first pillar of what we're going to talk about today.
And so
when you do first become polyamorous, it is really important to look inward and really become aware of your own internal biases surrounding non-monogamy and relationships in general. So something that I had, and I'm sure that all of us had, was internalized poly guilt immediately. And so that kind of looks like just being... feeling guilty about the fact that we are told sort of you're having your cake and eating it too, and that's not okay in a way. Instead of being like, well, you know, I should be okay with one person. I should be okay with what the societal norm tells us is what we need to be doing at all times. Mm-hmm. And I think that that just takes a lot of years of deprogramming in a way to really get comfortable with it.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing was learning to deprogram, I guess, how sex negative I was.
Oh, yeah, ditto. Mm-hmm.
You know, about all of the messages that I received both in my childhood, like in my formative years, about what I should or shouldn't want sexually as a woman, for mm-hmm. instance. And then on top of it, in my adult years as well, dating people and as I was kind of trying to find my identity, find what it is that I want in relationships, also butting up against dating partners, telling me, you know, that I shouldn't want to have multiple partners, or yeah. I shouldn't want a particular type of sex or a particular frequency of sex or
did
sex with a particular person.
Like that you shouldn't want sex at all?
Oh,
also?
Yeah. Hell
like
fucking
even from,
yeah.
From partners, just the idea that you would like be the one to initiate sex would be something negative about you.
I had a partner tell me like, oh, you've slept with three people. Like that's a ton. That's really promiscuous. Mm-hmm. Which was fucked up.
Yeah, seriously.
That is fucked up. I don't know. No, I think with any partners I've had in the past, like, it's okay for me to want sex if it's with them all the time.
Right.
But, like, the only time I've ever been accused of, like, wanting too much sex has been if it's, like, I want sex with someone else as well.
Hmm.
Actually, you know what? That's not true. Like, I've definitely been accused of, like, being greedy for wanting certain things sexually.
Huh.
Like, more than one orgasm or something like that.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right?
Like, wow.
And I'm like, it's not like it's hard. Like, it's,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
for some people it is. Even for
I know for some people it is.
Yes,
but
no, I hear you. Wow.
Yeah, but just so yeah, I mean, it comes at us not just in our upbringing, but also like you were saying in our relationships for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
That, and I think that even for people who decide to be non-monogamous, those stigmas of like that non-monogamous people are less responsible or they're less likely to be contributing members of society or
just
like
selfish.
Yeah, selfish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that one I've heard so many times.
Yeah. I've definitely gotten that, the selfish one, or at least be questioned about that by new partners that I've dated since being polyamorous who themselves were sort of like, well, I'm interested to try it. I'm not sure. I'm interested in you though. That is one that comes up. It's like, don't you feel like you're being selfish sometimes?
And you're like, no.
Well, I mean, my answer in that case was just sort of like, well, what's selfish about it exactly?
Yeah.
It seems like if anything, it like to say, I get this person and no one else can have them seems
that's
like the selfish,
selfish
thing. If you're thinking about it in, you know, as an analogy to like a cake or a toy or something that I'm the only one who can play with this toy versus anyone else can play with this toy as well if the toy wants to.
Well,
my metaphor's gotten away
from
that.
Yeah, that's tough. I know for sure.
Well, okay, but I think the main takeaway here is I think just the fact that no matter how confident you feel in your identity and in your choices, like you're still constantly steeped in a lot of messages all from all around you of people and TV and media and everything trying to tell you like what you want is not correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, regardless of how confident you are, it takes energy to just be able to like live with that.
Yeah, and deal with that.
And
on
deal
a daily
with that
basis.
On a daily basis.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's also our fear of rejection, which I think is huge. And it's not just like being rejected by our friends and family because we are polyamorous or we're deciding to do this thing that's very different from what other people are doing. But it's also that rejection when meeting new people, when trying to go out there and date and just saying to them like, hey, this is who I am. And having that possibility that they're not going to want to be with you because of it.
Right. That's such a huge one. I know
yeah.
I struggled with that for years, like so many years that I spent dating and knowing that like non-monogamy is something that I want, but I'm so scared of the idea that I would go on a first date and this person would reject me because I said that. And so I try to find all these like shady ways of like talking around it or like really postponing how long I'd wait before I brought it up because I'm just like, I want like the most important thing is I need this person to like me first. They need to like me first. They need to like me first. And then I can pitch them on this. And it took me years until I realized like, no, if this person's going to like me, like that's a part of me too that they have to like.
It's
and
a
if
big
they don't
part of me.
Like that part, then they just don't like me. And I have to get over the fear of someone not liking me.
Yeah,
and that relates to our next point here, which is to find ways to empower yourself through those difficult times of being polyamorous. And, you know, basically, how do you connect to your sense of self-worth and your self-esteem to the point where you can handle those types of rejections and to have conviction about what you're doing so that you can, like, with confidence say exactly what Dedeker was saying of, like, well, if someone doesn't want to be with me because of this, like, that is part of me. So that just means they don't want to be with me.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I would rather have them know that sooner than later, or to try to kind of manipulate them into liking me later by getting them attached to me first or something like that.
Yeah, like attached to what's ultimately an incorrect version of me, which I think people don't realize.
Well, because I think it's tied to a lack of self-worth. If you feel like, well, no one could really like all of me, so I've got to find this way to kind of lure them in first before they have to deal with the shitty side of me, which is being polyamorous.
God knows I've struggled with that.
Yeah.
Like, just with that bare belief of, like, if someone really knew all of me, they wouldn't love me, they wouldn't like me, they wouldn't want to date me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know for me, this goes beyond just, like, pitching it to new partners for the first time or, like, talking to someone on a dating app and talking about my life. This extends beyond to, like, at least in my life. Okay, so maybe, like, I'm on a first date with someone and they know, you know, because I make sure they know ahead of time what it is. And, like, I answer questions on the first date and they're still interested.
They've Googled you.
They've Googled me.
You know, you wrote a book on the subject.
They're still into it. But then when it gets down to brass tacks, for instance, like, they send me a message a week later, like, what are you up to? And, like, I happen to be, like, heading to the movies with Jace, for instance. That in that moment of being like, do I say, oh, I'm about to head to a movie with Jace, or do I just say, oh, I'm about to head to a movie? And, like, I still sometimes have that deep instinct of, like let's not risk it because of having bad experiences in the past. Like, let's just say we're heading to a movie and just kind of try to, like, soften it, like, cushion them a little bit, you know?
Yeah, we've talked about it before, is, like, sugarcoating.
The sugarcoating a little bit. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, it's, like, they know about me having other partners. They know about Jace and Alex and whatever. But, like, there's still that instinct to be, like, ooh, do I need to cushion them from this? And I find for myself, I have to, like, just really psych myself up when I'm writing that text message and just be like, no, like, I'm just going to tell them actually what's happening. And again, if this person cannot handle me going to the movies with Jace, like, I would rather they can't handle me at all. I'd rather deal with that little bit of pain now than much later.
Yeah.
I had a relationship a while, I guess it was a couple years ago now, but where, you know, she was new to polyamory and was kind of saying, okay, I'm interested, let's try this, see how it goes. And the relationship ended up not working out. And a mutual friend of ours later, and she and I were talking about it, and the friend, you know, her take on it was, you should have treated her with more kid gloves. You should have sugarcoated this more and protected, like, her from it more. And what I responded to her, I was like, I actually think I should have done the opposite. Because I think the mistake I made in that case was trying to shield her from it too much at first so that she didn't get an accurate impression of what a relationship with me would actually look like. And then as time went on,
a little bit of specifics about that?
Well, just about specifically in this instance, it was the fact that I would also go on dates with new people.
Right? That's a big one.
I didn't do that at first because it's like, well, I want her to kind of feel comfortable first before I actually would go on a date with anyone new. Or express interest in anyone else that's new. That's one I've really struggled with, of being more upfront about that earlier in a relationship if it's someone who's new to polyamory. Even if it's someone who's not, because I have that internalized poly guilt about, oh, if I'm attracted to someone else or if I admit that, that must mean I don't like the person I'm dating. So that was kind of an example there, is that then as that did come up, she had a hard time with the idea of, like, well, why are you going on a date with someone new? Do you know what I mean? That or in my case, also just the amount of time that I realistically had to spend with her and to go out with her and to do stuff together, that I think early in the relationship. And I understand this, like, it's, you're excited about a new relationship, you're going to want to spend a lot of time with them. But I think that also I gave a little bit of a false impression of how much time I had available for her. And that then, as, again, this was sort of as time went by, especially with me traveling part of the year too, that then that kind of became real, and she was hurt by that and felt sort of
neglected.
Yeah, felt neglected, or felt like this wasn't the relationship that she thought she had signed up for, yeah. essentially. Mm-hmm. And so in talking with her friend later, who was like, you should have protected her from this more, essentially. And I said, no, I actually think I should have done the opposite, because I think I gave her the wrong impression about what this relationship would be like. Mm-hmm. And because that is who I am, and that's not going to change.
Yeah.
And if she had known that more up front, she could have... she could have been more enabled to make that choice or deal with it or whatever, right? That she could have made a more informed choice. And when I said that, the mutual friend was like, oh, wow. Like, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think you're right.
Yeah.
So, sorry, that was a sad memory to think about.
Oh, it's all right.
But it's okay. You learned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You learned.
I hope definitely. So. I hope other people can learn so they don't have to do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And I guess this is related to our next one here, which is to figure out for yourself how to talk about non-monogamy when it's not going well, right?
Yeah.
Or when it's brand new for you and you're still like, I don't know if I'm going to be happy with this, but it's something I really want to try.
Yeah, because it's very normal for people to just be like, well, all your relationship problems are happening because you're non-monogamous.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Or if you're brand new, I mean, I definitely got this, like when the first time I talked to someone about opening up a relationship for the first time, and I think it was, again, it was like opened up the relationship and had barely even done anything, you know, to actually experience it. And I had like people being like, ah, it's not going to last mm-hmm. right away,
yeah.
you know, and it's a hard position because it's very different from where I am now, where I have all this body of evidence yeah. of things working out for me. And back then, like, I didn't. I was like, I really didn't know if it was going to last or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so how do you be, like, unapologetic for yourself in those instances?
Well, Emily's talked about this a little bit, about sort of having conviction when mm-hmm. you start out.
Yes, my mother's favorite phrase.
And how to do that even if you're not sure yet.
Yeah, and I think it's just understanding and letting people know, like, this is something that's making me happy. Because my best friend, like, she was getting married around the time that Jace and I were coming out as polyamorous, and she was just aghast and so upset. I've talked about this in previous episodes, really, really angry and very much telling me, like, this is not who I thought you were, that I know that this is not what you want, I know you, and I know that, like, this is wrong for you. Mm-hmm. And in spite of all of that, like, I had to really just say, like, you know, this is something that I'm trying. It does make me really happy. And so I am going to continue to do it. Mm-hmm. And for that to be okay.
Right.
And, you know, we sort of like did not contact each other for as much for a number of years until finally, after many, many years, she was like, okay, like, I'm learning to just deal with it because I have to, because this is clearly a part of you now.
Right. So I think that if you're in a situation where maybe you're trying this for the first time and you're not happy with it yet, like it's just kind of unknown or scary or uncomfortable, that I think coming back to at least taking ownership and not being unapologetic for your choices can be an important thing
yeah.
of like, you know, expressing to people like, this is something that I've chosen to try right now. Like this is something I've chosen to explore right now to see if it's right for me. Maybe it will be right for me. Maybe it won't be. But I have chosen to try this.
Yeah.
And I will deal with
it.
Well, I will deal with whatever happens. Because
yeah.
I think that's right. The thing is, I think, and we've talked about this, especially if you're a woman in a relationship with a man, a lot of people are going to assume, oh, you were coerced into this. Like, you're just trying to do this to make this person happy. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it is really important to, even if you don't know how it's going to turn out, you don't know if this is right for you, that you do emphasize, like, I did choose to try this.
Yeah. It's no one is making me do anything.
Right.
Like, I have my own agency
right.
in this. Yeah.
And I think ultimately, if you are happy, like, if it's brand new to you, or if you've been doing this for many, many years, and it is something that is fulfilling to you, even during the moments that it's challenging, you don't have to let people gaslight you into thinking that you're not happy.
Totally.
You know, no one can say to you, if you truly are happy and fulfilled, no one can say to you, no, you're not
yeah.
happy and fulfilled. I know you're not.
They can try, but...
They can try to say that, but you're
correct.
The person who knows.
Yes.
Exactly.
Totally.
Yeah, I think also coming back to just the idea that this is something that aligns with my beliefs,
mm-hmm.
kind of, again, that taking ownership of your choices and your decision to conduct relationships this way, to say that this is something that... feels right to me, or it aligns with my beliefs, or is something that I think could make me really happy and could be the right relationship format for me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm new to it. Maybe it's difficult right now, because it is difficult to transition to it, at least for most people.
Yeah, at the beginning, for sure.
And to give that, like, in when you're talking to these people, to remember that for yourself, for one, that you're doing this because you believe in it, not just because it's going to fix all your problems right away. Because if you expect it to do that, you're going to be disappointed.
Yes.
But then the other thing I wanted to mention is just to keep in mind for yourself the idea that if we would only do monogamy, if we were always happy doing it, no one would do monogamy, right? Like, there's no magic bullet relationship solution that will make you always be happy and never have disappointment and never have anything go wrong and never have a miscommunication. That's absurd. Mm-hmm. And I think people understand that about monogamy. So that, at least I find, is a useful touchstone for remembering, like, yes, okay, we're always working to be better at relationships, but just because this is hard right now doesn't mean that the whole way of doing it is necessarily
right,
wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make one last point before we move on, while we're here still talking about looking inward and kind of your internal life. I think it's, honestly, even after multiple years of doing this, like, rejection still sucks. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a little bit better at fielding it, but it still sucks, especially if there's someone that, like, you're really interested in and you're hoping that they'll be okay with the whole non-traditional thing, and ultimately they're not. Like, it still hurts. And so I think that's why it's important to, even before you get rejected, know how to take care of yourself during those times. Know how to reconnect to loving yourself, know how to reconnect to reminding yourself that, like, you are loved, especially if you do have multiple partners. Like, you are loved, regardless of this, if, you know, whether or not this particular Yahoo rejects you or not, you know, you do still have love. And that's a great advantage of being in a multi-partner relationship, is that if someone rejects you, that's not the end of the story. That's not your last chance for being loved.
Absolutely.
You know, you're in this context. And so I think just always being mindful of that, of, you know, if it takes you needing to give yourself a bunch of positive self-love mantras every day, as silly as that may feel, but if it's effective, then do that to, you know, to, I guess, just to make sure that at the end of the day, you can still be true to yourself and love yourself rather than compromise what you want for the favor of, you know, for the sake of making sure someone doesn't reject you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy, or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI, at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
So we've talked about looking within yourself and kind of helping yourself out to be unapologetic. What's the next step of that?
So the next step of that is your close inner circle relationships, is what we're calling it. So this is, could be your current partners, it could be your friends, your family, and that some of them may feel like they need some special treatment or some adjustment time to get used to you coming out or to accept that idea. And we do want to have a little caveat here that family dynamics are a very complex thing, and there can be a whole episode about this. In fact, there was a whole episode about this, although maybe we'll redo on about that at some point. So we're only going to touch briefly on like the real intricacies of family, but this, but some of these things I feel like apply to all of those, any kind of close relationship that you have. So the first one we wanted to talk about is, it goes along with the idea of having that poly guilt, right? Where you feel guilty about the fact that you're getting to do this or that you want to do this. And that's that within your existing relationships, this feeling of, I want to do this, and anytime I do it, I need to prepare myself to do damage control after I've gone on a date with someone else. Mm-hmm. I mean, meaning damage control in my existing relationship.
Yeah.
Right? Assuming that you're in a relationship that you've opened up.
Meaning that you like come home and you sort of have to like make the other person feel a certain way or do damage control with them.
Yeah, exactly. Like the idea that after going on a date with someone else, you either have to... And, you know, you might not live with them, but
sure.
You might not live with your current partner. But
I was just thinking about what you and I used to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is coming home. See, I did it too.
Yeah.
Coming back to your partner and having to either downplay that the date went well, right. Kind of being like, well, I don't know. They were okay, but they didn't do this thing as well as you. Or right. Trying to like do a lot of that, or just... having the just this kind of sheepish attitude about it, like, oh, you know, it went well, and then like, I love you so much, like let's go do a fun thing, or I feeling like I need to fix something because I've damaged it by going on this other date.
And there's nothing wrong with like reconnecting with your partner after you go on a date. That's really lovely, but there's a difference between doing that and then damage control or sugarcoating it again.
But it makes so much sense, just again, because of the messages that we receive. Like, I've had partners, relatively recent partners, who will like go on a date and feel really hesitant to tell me about that date. Mm-hmm. Not because I've ever had a bad reaction, because I'm like, come on, like I wrote a book on this, you know. But I think just because of social conditioning, you know, of just just making this assumption that like talking to a partner about a first date is not going to be a good conversation, or talking to a partner about your attraction to someone else is not going to be a good conversation.
Yeah.
And there's actually more tension generated because my partner came into that conversation, I guess, somehow assuming I was going to have a bad reaction, rather than if he just kind of come to me just with the bare facts and we just talked about it.
Yeah. This is a big one. And we've talked about this before on the show, but I do feel like it's worth bringing up. It is... something called the Pygmalion effect is what it's called in psychology. And essentially it's...
Higgins.
The Henry Higgins effect? The Henry Higgins effect?
Henry Higgins.
Is that horrible?
That is horrible, yes.
Okay.
Pygmalion effect describes this effect that if you expect someone to either behave badly or positively, like this study was done with school children, that if a teacher expects certain students to do well this year and other ones to do bad, those students are actually more likely to fulfill those prophecies
Of the way the teacher kind of subconsciously treats them or speaks to them, or
there's not a clear explanation of why this happens, but it does happen. However, something really interesting about it is that if the student in this case, or if the person sort of having the expectations put on them is aware that those expectations have been placed on them, it negates the effect. It actually cancels that out because they're aware and can take steps to act against it to sort of prove them wrong. But if they're not aware, we kind of, to a certain extent, must be going along with people's assumptions of us, or in those subtle sort of body language or the wording choices we have.
It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, but
exactly
through someone else's lens. Huh. Interesting.
And this was found on the positive side too, that if you expect more positive things from these students, that they would also perform better. And these were assigned at random. They expected them to perform positively because they had done well. It was totally random. And this has been shown in other cases as well, with things like job interviews or, you know, little tests that they'll do in psychological studies. And I think this really comes into play in your relationships. Because if I come in expecting you to be upset about the fact that I had a good date, the way I approach it and the way I talk about it is going to make you feel, even if you didn't before, like,
more likely
like
to.
I'm picking up on some kind of vibe.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I think that can result in something we see a lot of, someone kind of being like, know, I'm happy for you, but I feel like you're leaving something out or you're being dodgy or whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which again, I think is part of our like conditioning to think that if someone's seeing someone else, there must be something sketchy going on or it must be threatening somehow.
Interesting. Yeah. So related to this is this idea that like, let's say you have existing partners, you start dating someone new, and maybe that new person is totally okay with your existing partners. Maybe this new person even already identifies as polyamorous or whatever. And it's a really common phenomenon that this new partner will be okay with your existing partners, but then once you date someone new after them, then they're
not
really,
the new shiny thing anymore.
Yeah, they're really not okay. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very common. Like, I've experienced it personally, you know, being the person who's dating someone new and the new person, you know, that's really, really common. And so I think that's why it's especially important, especially if you're dating someone who's relatively new to non-traditional relationships, that, you know, like Jace was saying, to not be apologetic about just the way that you expect to live your life and to live your relationships. And while maybe that doesn't mean that the week after you start dating them, you immediately try to date someone else to kind of artificially set up some kind of expectation, but to at least have some very real conversations about the fact that
this is going to happen eventually.
This is going to happen, like, eventually, maybe not next week, or maybe not even next year, like, or I don't know, that I am probably going to date someone else. If that's true for you, maybe that's not true for you, but if that is true for you, that you anticipate that you're going to want to continue to be free to, like, explore and go on first dates or explore new connections or maybe go to a play party and play with new people or whatever it is, to at least be as real and honest about that as possible, even if you're not acting about it right at this particular moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, that's especially come up with sexual things, like your example of a play party, that's something I carry a lot of guilt about, the idea that that for me, I have a lot of internalized guilt about being told, like, as a man, the fact that you must want sex all the time because you're a man is what makes you bad and what makes you a bad person. And so to me, like, I've really internalized that it's sort of shameful for me to ever admit anything about casual sex, or that I would want that, or that I would do it. So that's a good example that for some people might also be true, whether you're male or female. Like, we all get that kind of sex negative programming.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I definitely, you know, years ago, I made what I learned now was a big mistake in the way that I talked about how I ran my life, that I talked to a partner about how, you know, I don't seek out a ton of casual sex. I tend to just go for, like, building relationships. And the thing is that, like, that's true about me. Like, I don't tend to seek out a ton of casual sex, but it doesn't mean that I never have casual sex.
And that was
the big problem, is that then a couple years later, when I did have some casual sex, it was a huge fucking problem, because this person perceived, like, built this expectation that means my partner's never going to go hook up with someone, and that's okay with me, you know, and anything else is not.
It's so interesting, because you're never quite aware of what is going to potentially set someone off.
Right. Sometimes it's really surprising.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, really? You give a shit about that?
Yeah. But and I think I also made the assumption of, like, in my personal history, the times that partners have been the most upset is when a relationship gets more serious.
Exactly.
And so I thought for sure, like, well, no one's going to get upset about casual sex, you know, because most people are like, oh, as long as it's casual, it's fine. But then it was totally flipped in this situation.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now I've learned that, like, I always have that conversation with people that, like, no, I don't tend to have a lot of casual sex, but sometimes I do.
Yeah. You know? That needs to be okay.
And that needs to be okay.
Totally. Yeah. All right, so we've talked about our internal work. We've talked about the work that we're doing with our close family and friends and partners. And now we want to talk about how we go to the rest of the world. Exactly.
Kind of zooming out each level.
So the first section of this is talking to the people that you want to date or that you may meet and that you're like, oh, I'm interested in this person.
Someone who's not a partner, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So when you're flirting, it's really important to let people know that you're polyamorous, or even before you start flirting with them.
Before.
Just, like, that's important.
Bring it up casually. And don't worry that you're just going to, like, scare someone away when polyamory is talked about immediately.
Yeah, I think that people are afraid to bring it up for a number of reasons, and I think part of it's just that rejection thing, or they'll do the, like, well, I'll go on a couple dates with them first, and then I'll bring it up so they'll like me, like we talked about that.
We had a partner that did that.
Yeah.
And it just, it it sets up your whole relationship based on dishonesty.
Totally. Right. It's a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That because, and you might say, well, oh, I never said I was monogamous, but like, no, come on, don't be a dick. Right? Like yeah. we know that everyone assumes that if you don't say otherwise. Mm-hmm. So you are lying. Like, don't try to tell me that you're not.
Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I think it's also important to, and again, it can be tricky because sometimes you can start flirting with someone or you don't even realize that you are until you're in the middle of it. But I think just the important thing to bear in mind is before the first date, bring it up. Bring mm-hmm. up the fact that you're in a non-traditional relationship. Or that you have non-traditional values, or that you want a particular format of relationship is what you're looking for in dating or in dating this person. Mm-hmm. Don't use it as a way to start flirting with someone, because yeah. I think that's more likely going to get people scared and running away from you if you're using your polyamorous identity as like the pickup line to start talking with someone. It's probably not going to go well unless mm-hmm. they happen to also be polyamorous. They're like, that's great, me too, let's talk.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Right? Yeah.
So also, if you do get rejected,
yeah,
what should you do?
Basically, I think the key here is to reframe it for yourself mm-hmm. so that if you mention that you're polyamorous and someone very clearly is like, that's not something I'm interested in, or, you know, for whatever reason, is rather than thinking of it as a rejection of you, because it's not. I mean, maybe they were flirting with you before that. Maybe they were interested in you. But if that's something they're not into, then that's good that they know that about themselves and that they're making decisions for themselves about what types of relationships they want. In the same way that you're doing, saying, I want to have polyamorous relationships, they might have a belief that I only want to have monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
Or I'm only looking for someone that's going to lead toward marriage and kids. Maybe that is their choice. And I think turning it around to be like, cool, like, thank you for knowing what you want and for taking care of yourself mm-hmm. and for standing up for what it is that you want to have in your life.
Right.
Because neither of us would be happy if you didn't.
Totally. Right, right. Now, if this person has questions for you, maybe part of their decision-making mm-hmm. process is asking you a bunch of questions of like, how does that work? How do you do it? How would I fit into that? Mm-hmm. What if this happens? What if that happens? Which we've all dealt with before.
Absolutely.
It's okay to have that conversation. But if someone says to you, you know, like, I don't think this is something that I'm interested in, you don't have to try to convince them.
No.
And sitting there and trying yes. to argue with them is probably not going to get you a date either. Well,
definitely not. Or if yeah. it does, it's not going to be a date that leads to a good relationship.
Right, yeah. right. Like, but yeah, I think that's good of like framing it, even if it's just internally, of framing it as like, this person's taking care of themselves and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I did want to point out too, that just because maybe you are having good flirty vibes, you bring this up and you feel them withdraw a little bit or get a little weird about it. Mm-hmm. If you're not pushing them and you're not trying to convince them, you may find that later at that event, they'll warm back up because they needed some time to just process that and right. let it sink in. Or maybe they've had a bad experience with someone using it as sort of a predatory pickup line-y thing. And when you don't do that, they might come around later to be like, huh, you seem very different from other people I've met who have done this, or the bad impressions I've gotten. Can we talk more about it? I found that happens a lot, actually, when you don't try to convince anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think another important part of this is, particularly when you're, you know, looking for someone to date, is again, just to be consistent, you know, mm-hmm. start the process of being open and honest and unapologetic with them as early as you can in the process.
Yeah.
And again, sometimes like maybe you meet someone at a party and you just have a great conversation, and then it's not until the end of the night that you realize like, oh, we were totally vibing, this person's interested. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean all is lost because you haven't brought it up yet, but bring it up as soon as you can. You know, the more that you draw it out, the more difficult that conversation is going to be. And trust me, like, I've had clients who have dragged out this conversation for like 6 months.
Holy shit.
God.
Yeah.
And by the time you've postponed it for 6 months, it doesn't go well.
Oh, I bet.
Just so you know.
And also, I live with someone.
Yeah. Oh, that too. Yeah. Especially if you're like living with someone, or if you have like existing relationships, like the longer you put off that conversation, the worse it's going to be for you.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And this is also something I found, just to go back to bring it up early, is like, if I even remotely start to think, oh, this person might be flirting with me, or I might want to flirt with them, I will try to find a way to bring up polyamory in the conversation. And it helps that I'm out, so all my friends know, so it's an easy thing to just bring up.
It's also a little bit easier having a podcast and like a book.
But
and
if you have a podcast like you listen knows. To.
Totally.
Right.
I think we have enough episodes that pretty much anything in any conversation, you could be like, oh, that reminds me of this thing I heard on the Multiamory podcast.
And you know what? It also, you don't even have to be clever about it. Mm-mm. Like, you can just, you can be straight up with this person of like, you know what? I find you attractive. I'm interested in you, or I would love to go on a date with you. And because of that, it's really important for me that you know X, Y, and Z about me, or like that you know that I'm interested in non-monogamy or that I identify as polyamorous. So you can even like couch it within something that is positive, that is expressing to this person, hey, like I find you really attractive and interesting and I want to get to know you more.
Honesty is a must.
Right.
And all of that is really great.
And honesty. And again, it doesn't have to even be clever about like, you know, trying to find some way to weasel it into the conversation. You can't just be straight up.
Yeah.
Weasel.
So let's talk about being unapologetic when talking just to everyone else in the world, essentially. This could be a coworker, a stranger, your Uber driver, your, you know, the random stranger who I don't know, you somehow get into a conversation in line at the grocery store about. Again, obviously not every conversation needs to be about this, but sometimes this comes up, you know.
It definitely does for me a lot. But I want to stress that, like, we as a community are not more enlightened than anyone else. We're not, right. Like, we don't like understand relationships in a way that other people do just simply because we're doing them in this fashion. And I think a lot of people do think and put it out there that like they're somehow better than someone else just simply because they're polyamorous and they live their lives in this way. Perhaps, you know, we know how well it works for us. But that doesn't mean that, like, we're doing anything better than anyone else. And that's a real turnoff if you say, like, well, I'm more enlightened because I do this. So if someone's going to be like, right. Wow, you're a dick.
Yeah, regardless of what their opinion is, like, it's probably just not going to come off very well if that's the stance that you take.
Absolutely. And also, there's this fear out there of the polyamorous possibility. I think just because, and again, when Jason and I came out, I thought about this in regards to my best friend, because I think that a part of her was like, I get this idea of maybe being attracted to more than one person or being potentially in love with more than one person, but still feeling like I have to choose. And if you know that polyamory is out there and that there's this possibility of more than just one option, that's a potentially fearful place to get into.
I mean, it's exciting for some people, but
yes,
it's very
it is.
Fearful for
others. For
others,
yes. Yeah. And to be understanding of that and know, like, okay, they're not just, like, shitting all over what I'm doing, but there is potential fear involved here.
Right. So just being mindful of that
yes.
Like, I think people are going to be much more likely to interpret, oh, this person's trying to, like, convert me or proselytize or tell me that, like, this is what I should be doing, or they're trying to, like, threaten my relationship, that just for some reason, people are just much more likely to go to that place. So just bear that in mind ahead of time when heading into these conversations.
I think going along with the idea of not trying to convince people right away or not feeling the need to convince people is this idea that if in order for someone to agree with you or at the very least stop arguing with you, they have to admit that they're wrong. And in this case, possibly that means admitting that what they've been doing their entire life is wrong.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
Right? That's not going to happen. It's definitely not going to happen when they're being confronted with you about this. So just that's not the way to, I want to say it's not the way to win these arguments or these conversations, but like don't go in with that goal at all.
Right. Yeah.
Right? That's not the
You're
point
not here
of
to
this.
Convert anyone.
Exactly. Right. People, if this resonates with them, they will come to it on their own. They're not going to come to it because you've like out-logicked them in this right. conversation.
Totally.
Yeah. And then the other part of that is just pick your battles. And that's that you don't even need to, if someone is being somewhat aggressive with you or like very against this, because, you know, even if it's just come up in conversation and you're not trying to convince them, you just feel like you're defending yourself, that to understand you don't have to fight every single fight, and that sometimes you can just say, you know, I see that this is upsetting to you. This is something that's right for me. I hope you can respect that. And let's not talk about this now.
Be
and
the just, bigger person.
Right.
Yeah. Do not
well,
let
just it takes so much emotional labor as it is to have these conversations a lot of the time. I've definitely found in my own life, obviously, like, my work is having these conversations. And so that means in my personal life, like, I really try to pick and choose, who am I going to actually have a conversation about this with? Like, who am I going to get into the nitty gritty of this with? And it's not everybody. It's actually a lot fewer people than I think it was 5 or 10 years ago. That I like to think I've gotten a lot better at just being able to say, like, yeah, this is what I do and this is my life. And if you want to know more about it, you can listen to the podcast.
I so appreciate
but I don't want to talk about it right now.
No, exactly. I so appreciate at work, like, if somebody is struggling with a relationship thing, how many other people go up to them and they're like, you should talk to Emily about that. She knows all about this. And I was like, but it's kind of nice. I mean, when you get to a point where you are so out that people are like, they have knowledge and they, you know, think about relationships in a different way that might be interesting.
I think it's nicer for us because of the fact that we're in this position, but I think,
yes, we're very privileged in that way.
For other people though, you don't always want to be the guru that everyone gets, like, sends their friends to.
No, you can pick and choose and say, like, actually, I'm not really interested in talking to you about that.
And luckily for all of you, you have this podcast to refer people to.
Exactly. Instead. Just send them to us. We'll take care of it.
Yes. Yeah. So on this subject of coming out to people, and we do want to reiterate, this might not be the right choice for everyone right now, depending on whether that's safe for you to come out to people, you know, aside from the ones that you're actively in relationships right now. Like, definitely be honest with those people. But in terms of everyone else, it can be difficult. You had some tips about that.
Yeah. So I think, again, we could do an entire episode just on the coming out conversation or figuring out who to come out to. But in the interest of time, I recommend people go to the therapist Dara Hoffman Fox's website. We had them on the show a long time ago. Mm-hmm. We're going to have them back on the show pretty soon.
I'm really excited.
I included their worksheet that they created for coming out in my book as well. But they made this amazing, amazing, like, step-by-step formulaic process of figuring out who is the best person in your life to come out to.
Mm.
And it's very mathematical, actually. It's, you know, assigning numerical values to, like, the importance of this particular relationship versus how much time you want to invest in having this coming out conversation versus how safe you feel with this person versus how you would feel if this relationship evaporated or if there was a huge negative consequence if you came out to this person. And it's great. I recommend it to a lot of people because I think that even if you can find one person in your life to come out to, like, who's not a partner, like a best friend or a sibling or a parent, if that feels safe, even just one person, it's a really good opportunity for you to practice being unapologetic. And I'm telling you, even just one person can help make that pressure of constantly having to be closed or having to hide, it can relieve a lot of that pressure too, even if you have just one person. So I'd highly recommend it. You can Google Dara Hoffman Fox coming out worksheet, or we're going to include a link to it directly in the show notes.
Yay.
Yay. Unapologetic. The stupid term you came up with ago, but now I do kind of love it.
Now it's like a thing.
It's a thing.
Hopefully you all out there can do it in some way in your life, even if it's a small way, even if it's just coming out to one person.
Yeah. Even if it's not just your relationship.
Totally.
If it's your gender identity or the hobby that you really love or your guilty pleasure. You know, find the ways that you can be unapologetic to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
If you would like to have your question or your comment played on the show, you can call 678
MULTI05.
And you can leave us a voicemail there. You can also send us an audio message at the Multiamory Facebook page. You can email us at info@multiamory.com, or of course, you can send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. To support our show and to join our private Facebook community, go to patreon.com/multiamory. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Almond from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.